Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is using Qix Dynamic Scripting. Today's presenter is Jonathan Lawrence. Jonathan has worked on scripting in Qix since 2008, initially developing the CA1S Qix PHP support pack. He subsequently led development of the Qix Dynamic Scripting Feature Pack, delivered in June 2010. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to John.
Thank you, Joseph. I think we can probably move straight on to slide one, please. Okay, the agenda for this session is essentially, this session is a continuation of the previous session, which was in October. And so some of the slides, of the second half of the presentation is the same. The agenda for today is, first of all, to give a very quick overview and summary of what we covered in the previous WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. So we review some material from that previous session. And then we go into look at the subject of using Qix Dynamic Scripting, the Xero programming model, some information about configuration, interacting with existing Qix assets, restrictions, pitfalls, then summary and questions. There is some overlap with the previous session. I'm reviewing some of the material. If we could move on to slide three, please. Okay. So here we go into an overview of what we covered in the previous session. Slide four, please. In the previous session, which was titled Introduction to Qix Dynamic Scripting, presented on the 12th of October, there is a replay and demo available, and the link is given there in the presentation. The topics we covered were an overview and key features of Qix Dynamic Scripting, in which I mentioned that Qix Dynamic Scripting is essentially embedding the Xero, the Project Xero project into Qix. We then had a brief architectural overview of Qix Dynamic Scripting, a description of the steps for installation and configuration, a demonstration of the basic administration functions, and then we began to look at the Xero programming model and what is involved in developing Qix Dynamic Scripting applications. So today's session continues from that point and the intention is to complete the demos, which I was unable to completely finish in the last presentation. If we could move on to slide five, please, now, Joseph. So first we look at the basic concepts of dynamic scripting. Slide six, please. So, Qix Dynamic Scripting embeds the Xero programming model into Qix, and it all runs in a Qix JVM server, in Qix Transaction Server version 4.1. As I'm going to cover the topics on this slide in a little bit more detail in the following slides, we won't dwell on this, except to say that I'm covering these topics from the Xero programming model, talking briefly about the configuration of Qix Dynamic Scripting via the two files mentioned here, and describing part of the procedure for interacting with Qix. Could we have the next slide? That's slide seven, please. Okay. In Qix Dynamic Scripting, as in Project Xero, all the behavior in the system consists of events. So you build up applications by defining and programming event handlers for the various events that occur. This slide gives an example of events which are fired when an HTTP request is received by Qix Dynamic Scripting. And you can see at the beginning we have a request begin event. Then one of the following get, post, put, or delete, depending on which type of HTTP request was received, followed by a log event, followed by a request end event. Each event causes the corresponding handler to be invoked on the same thread, so it's essentially a sequential programming model the event handlers are called as though they were routines. Could we have slide 8, please? Another aspect of the KIX dynamic scripting programming model is the global context, which is essentially a map of data, rather like a virtual file system. Access to it is language agnostic in the sense that there are language bindings for all three languages supported by KIX dynamic scripting, those being Java, PHP, and Groovy. The global context is used for passing data between the system and between events. So when an event handler is invoked, the global context is populated with some information which can be used by that event handler. The event handler can also store information in different areas of the global context, and that is then passed on to subsequent event handlers or back to the system. The global context contains different zones which have different lifetimes and different scopes depending on the nature of the data that you want to store. And this slide gives a summary of at least some of those. If the event zone is, the scope is a single event, so the handlers for that event can see the information in that zone. For a request, for example, an HTTP request being received by the system, all handlers along the path of that request can see and interact with that information. TMP is a temporary storage zone. The configuration zone is system-wide and can be viewed by all requests, all users, and all requests. The user zone is for a particular user. The app zone is for all users of the application, and storage is, again, is a global and long-lived area. In some of the following demos, you'll see examples of the zget and zput functions which are used to access the global context. Could we have slide 9, please, Joseph? PHP support in KIX dynamic scripting. We have our own PHP engine interpreter written in Java. This compiles PHP into Java bytecode in order to run on the JVM. This essentially means that we have very tight coupling between PHP and Java in KIX dynamic scripting, and this is also one of the mechanisms by which we can invoke KIX functions, because the JKIX APIs can be accessed from PHP using the Java bridge. There are some limitations on the PHP support in that not all PHP functions and extensions which are included in PHP.NET are included in the KIX or the KIX dynamic scripting PHP implementation. However, the coverage is sufficient to run a number of popular applications such as PHPB, WordPress, and so on. On the projectzero.org website, it's very small on this slide, but if you cut and paste that into a browser, you'll get more information on the limitations. As I mentioned just now, the PHP Java bridge allows PHP code to call Java APIs directly. And there's a code snippet there which shows how that's done. You use Java import to make a Java class available in PHP, and then you can access that class very much as though it was a PHP class. There's more information on this available, again, on the Project Zero website. So, Joseph, if we could move on to slide 10, please. Okay. In Project Zero, and hence in KIX Dynamic Scripting, after all applications, an application is a module. Modules can then declare dependencies on other modules in their iv.xml file, and then inherit the assets and behaviors from those dependencies. In KIX dynamic scripting, all applications must depend on 0.kix.core module. This provides the core integration functionality in order for a Project Zero application to run within a KIX JVM server. 0.kix.core itself depends on the module 0.core, which is part of Project Zero, and therefore pulls in the core standard Zero functionality. It's useful to note that modules are not just used for user applications. The core functionality of Zero and Kix Dynamic Scripting is itself implemented as a set of modules. If we could move on to slide 11 now, please, Joseph. Before it can be used, an application must be resolved. This means locating its dependent modules, that is the modules on which that application depends, directly or indirectly through its ivy.xml file, determining which versions to use, possibly, if necessary, retrieving them from a repository if they're not found locally, and then storing them in the local repository for the CLI, the command line interface. There are two commands available, two zero commands, which will have the effect of resolving an application. One is zero resolve, which will locate the same version to the dependencies as was used last time, or zero update, which will attempt to look for more recent versions of the modules which are being used by that application, downloading those and storing them in the local repository if necessary. So these commands will access a remote repository if no suitable version is found locally, either in the local repository or in the peer workspace. Could we move on to slide 12 now, then, please, Joseph? So this slide gives a description of where Resolve and Update look for their modules. So first of all, they look in the application's workspace, that is the parent directory of the application. So if there are modules available locally in the file system with the application, those will be used first. Secondly, they look in the local repository of the Zero installation. Finally, if the module is not found in either of those, it will search the remote repositories, in which case the current module group, which is configurable, will define which URIs are searched, and you can use Ivy or Maven type repositories. You can add your own URIs to the module groups and create new module groups. There is on the projectzero.org website more information on dependency and repository management for Project Zero. Could we move on to slide 13, please? So, once the application has been resolved, the location of the dependencies which are used are written to a file which is stored within the file structure of the application at the location indicated here. And this information is then used to construct the class path which is used to load the application's classes. Mostly, these are not part of the class path when the JVM is started, and they're added dynamically by the Project Zero runtime during initialization of an application. Slide 14, please. Now, there is a concept within Kix Dynamic Scripting of virtual directories in which, from the perspective of a developer and the perspective of the running application, artifacts are inherited from the dependencies. So the logical directory structure that you're looking at is a superposition of the application file structure and all its dependencies merged into one, so that you see all the artifacts and all the behavior of all the dependencies subject to rules of overriding. So, for example, if you create a file with the same name as one which is in one of your dependencies, then you see that version instead. So you override them, but otherwise you see all the files and all the versions of the files which are included in your dependency tree structure. An example of this is given in the demonstration, which I will come on to shortly. So, Joseph, if you could move on to the next slide, number 15, please. REST, representational state transfer, is a core concept of Kix Dynamic Scripting. It's the architectural model on which the World Wide Web is based, and it's become popular recently as a lightweight alternative to web services. The principles of it are that it adopts a resource-centric approach. Relevant resources are addressed by URIs, and the access, the type of access to a resource is determined by the HTTP method that you are using, which can be get, put, post, or delete. Content type negotiation allows alternative representations of a URI to be received. So, for example, it could be XML or it could be JSON. These are easy to access from code running in web browsers, for example, JavaScript, and any other clients or servers. The information here is the original reference for the concept of REST within HTTP. There's also a lot more information about the Kix Dynamic Scripting and Project Zero usages of REST and the conventions adopted for it, again, on the projectzero.org website. Could we move on to slide 16 now, please, Joseph? So, in Project Zero, there is the concept of a RESTful event handler in Project Zero and hence also in Kix Dynamic Scripting. Each script in the applications app resources directory is by default a resource handler for REST, for as a RESTful service. There is a convention is adopted for interacting with these resources in which the URI / resources followed by the collection name, optionally followed by a member ID and then additional path information, is specified on the HTTP request. So together, these define the resource to access via the URI and the action to perform via the HTTP method, get, put, post, or delete. So an action, one of these actions can be taken or made on the entire collection or on a specified member of the collection. And the examples here are given. So for example, if you invoke the GET request on the whole collection, then you end up, what you're essentially requesting is a list of all the resources of that type which are currently stored in your system. If you perform a post on the collection, it has the effect of creating a new member of that collection and returning the associated ID. If you perform a GET on a specific member, so this is the third line here, then you retrieve the information just about that member. A PUT request for a member updates, or in fact replaces, the specified content that you have provided on the PUT request. And delete will delete the member or the information that you've specified on the request. The resource handlers, by convention, have methods which are invoked by the Kix Dynamic Scripting infrastructure in response to such a request coming in from a client. And the functions or the methods which are invoked are listed here for each of the associated operations. Could we have slide 17? Is it 17 or the next slide? I can't quite see the number. 17, thank you. Right. Now I'm going to move into a demo, and I'm continuing the demonstration that we had in the previous WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session in October. In fact, I'm starting that demo from the beginning, just in case anybody missed the previous demonstration. So I'm going to move on to demo mode in just a second, and I will then go through the script. What we can see here, I've gone into demo mode, and you should be able to see a screen which looks like a Unix command line prompt here. And indeed, that's what it is. It is the ZOS Unix command line. And I'm set up with Kix Dynamic Scripting already set up and configured on the system. So I can therefore invoke some zero command, which is the mechanism provided in Qix Dynamics Scripting for administering the Qix Dynamics Scripting system. So, for example, I can type in 0 help, which will give me a list of available commands. There's a short delay. These 0 administrative functions in Qix Dynamics Scripting can be slightly slow to execute. This is not a problem because one normally expects in a typical system these commands are relatively infrequently used. The performance sensitive aspects of Qix Dynamics Scripting is when an application is up and running. During the invocation of that 0 command, a Qix JVM server was actually dynamically created and then discarded in order to run the code for that command within a Java environment within Qix. And we can in fact see that happening if I'm quick enough on the demonstration. If I run 0 help again, and when I run this, I'm quickly going to switch to a Qix screen, and we should be able to see the corresponding JVM server appear, initialize, perform the command, and then shut down again while that command is running. So I'll do that quickly. If this doesn't work, it's not a problem. So you can see the JVM server's come into life. Now it's gone away again. When we create and run an application, the JVM server for the application are longer lived, and we'll be able to see both those and the associated Qix web resources, which are necessary in order to receive HTTP requests and transmit them through to the Qix Dynamics Scripting code running in the JVM server. The next thing I'd like to do is create on the fly a brand new Qix Dynamics Scripting application. So the command for that is 0 create, and I'm going to call it WSTE demo, partly because that's a reasonably sensible name for this afternoon session, but also because I have an Eclipse Remote System Explorer set up, which is ready to look directly at this particular location in my ZOS Unix file system. So I'll just run this command quickly. This will create a new Qix Dynamics Scripting application. So it's creating it now. It successfully created it. And now if I list the file system, what you'll see is that where my mouse pointer is now, WSTE demo, the second of those directories there, has just been created. And essentially, a Qix Dynamics Scripting application is nothing more than a directory and a set of files which reside in the ZOS Unix ZFS file system. I'm going to switch to my Eclipse now, where I have RSE, Remote System Explorer, set up. And if I just refresh my view here, you can see now my WSTE demo directory together with a number of subdirectories, and within that some files. So for example, in the config directory of my application, there are these 3 files that have automatically been created. Now before I can start my application, I have to make a modification to the configuration in order to use a unique port number. Applications are by default, just cancel that and open it in text editor, in Eclipse. By default, they're always created with port 8080. I don't want to use that. I want to use a unique one, which I know is not being used for anything else. So I will use this number, save that. Then I'm ready to go back to my ZOS Unix and actually start that application. So first, in order to do that, I first need to change my scope to be within the application. So I just have to change directory. To the application directory, and then I can issue the command 0 start for that application. Okay. Now, if from the Kix screen, I can see that a long-lived JVM server has been created there for that. Also, a TCP IP service has been opened automatically with the port number which I specified. This is ready to listen on that port number, transmit any requests which it receives to Kix Dynamic Scripting running within that JVM server. So now if I move to a browser, this is showing some old data, so I'll ignore that. If I just go back to the application, and access the URL with no URI, just the bare URL, we come to the welcome page for that application, which is encouraging, and it shows us that the newly created application, WSTE Demo, is up and running. If I now... we are now ready to create some content, some real content in our application, consisting of scripts, resources, and other information. So first of all, I'll access hello.groovy. And hey presto, I get an error message saying that there is no such file, because indeed there isn't. So I now need to add content to my application. I've got some content which I prepared earlier, which is available in my Eclipse environment. So what I'm going to do is, from my prepared copy, I'm going to copy a script, the script hello.groovy, and I'm going to place that in the public directory of my application. And just quickly refresh my workspace. If I open up that file, you can see what it's going to do. A very simple script, a one-liner, simply prints out Hello World from Kix. Now, that script is now in my application, so if I reload this page, we should see Hello World from Kix appear. And indeed, if I can go back and I can edit that, I've edited the script, simply save it to the file system, reload, and you see the modified behavior of that script. So you can see that this is a very dynamic, iterative programming environment in which you can create scripts, modify them, run them on the fly. It's a very dynamic, productive environment for script-based programming, all running within Kix. Okay. The next part of the demonstration is, again, this is something which I did include in the previous session, is to include some additional capability in the application, that is the virtual directory browser and the ability to run PHP scripts. And I do this by adding some additional dependencies to my ivy.xml in my configuration. So I need to for this I add 0 kix php. That adds PHP support to my application, and also Xero Core Web Tools, which is provided by Kix Dynamics Scripting as a useful utility module, as we will see in a minute. Save that. Okay. Now, in order for those changes to take effect, I have to re-resolve the application and then recycle it. So for this, I issue the Xero resolve command. Takes a few moments to complete. And then Xero recycle. This has the effect of stopping and then restarting the application in order for those configuration changes to fully take effect. So it stopped the application now, and it's going to restart. It's restarted. What I can do now, if I go back to the welcome page of the application, it may not be obvious, but the welcome page has actually changed. If you try this yourselves, you'll see, if you go down to the bottom, there's additional links in this page, including a virtual directory browser. This new index page, this new front page for the application, has actually been provided by the Core Web Tools module, which has overridden the default welcome page provided by Kix Dynamics Scripting. If I click on the virtual directory browser now, this shows a view very similar to the view that we're seeing in the Eclipse workspace of the subdirectories which form part of the application, but also it's showing us not just the actual files which are part of the application on ZFS, but the full all the files which are logically included in the application by virtue of being a member of one or more of the dependencies of the application. So you can see here at the bottom, hello.groovy, which is actually a file in my public directory of my actual application, but we can also see the welcome page, index.gt, which has been pulled in from the module 0.core.webtools. The next thing I'm going to demonstrate is a small application, which again has been prepared in advance, for demonstrating the global context. So if I go back to my Eclipse workspace and Remote System Explorer, this script here, globalcontext.groovy, is a little script which exercises the global context. So if I copy that into my public directory and just refresh my workspace and open that in a browser, here you can see the zget and zput methods being invoked on different zones in the global context. Here's a zget for a counter in the request zone. A counter in the user zone, temp zone, and storage zone, respectively. These counters are incremented and then stored back using zput into the global context. The updated values are then displayed back to the end user browser. Now that I've done is I've copied that script into my public directory. That means it should be available on my in my application now. And I think if I click on the relevant link here, here you can see this is the first invocation of globalcontext.groovy. The count for each of the counters in each of the zones is currently 1. If I reload the page, you can see that all except the request counter 1, the request zone, is being reset. It's being emptied and therefore reloaded for each request. The user zone is the equivalent of an HTTP session, and because I am the same user, that's being incremented each time. So I can increment this a few times, and you see that all those zones are being incremented. What we can do now, however, if I use a different browser, I will have a different HTTP session, and therefore we should see that I effectively become a new user. So that's exactly what I'll get if I use Internet Explorer, say, instead of my Firefox. And you can see I've already got the relevant URI up in the navigation window. So all I need to do is reload that. And you can see that request is 1, user, the user count is now 1, whereas the temporary storage has been incremented in line with the Firefox. And if I go back to Firefox, you can see that the user is now lagging 1 behind temporary temp and storage zones because another user has come in and incremented those unbeknownst to the first browser. So I'll just do this again. But if I recycle my application, which I can quickly do, in my window here. This is going to start and stop the application, so we should see that the temp zone is reset to 0. So I'll just quickly go back to Firefox here, reload the page. You can see that the temp zone has counter has been reset to 1 simply because the temp zone was reset, but user and storage continue to be incremented as expected. So that's a quick view of what the global context is and what the different zone, the different behavior of the different zones. The next thing we can do is look at REST resource handlers. And as an example of that, I've got an example of that. And in this case, under /app/resources, I've got a sample resource handler. This one happens to be written in PHP, so it's people.php. It equally well could be implemented in Groovy or possibly in Java. But a Groovy script could be stored in app resources instead. So let me just copy that. Into app resources, copy that file in, refresh the workspace, open the file. This is a very simple script. It doesn't actually do anything. What it has here is an implementation of the methods which are going to be invoked for each of the RESTful methods, get, put, post, and delete on the entire collection or on individual members. And all it does, it doesn't actually have any backing store in this case. It simply outputs a message to the browser indicating that that particular method has been correctly invoked. There's a very useful tool which is an add-on to Mozilla Firefox called Poster, which enables us to send requests, any type of HTTP request, to a target server. And in this case, we're going to. The URL is very similar to the URL that I've been using, so I'll copy that. Poster you can download from the internet as a Firefox add-on. So the first thing I'm going to do is I've changed my URI to be /resources/people. When this is received by Kix Dynamic Scripting, it will look for a resource handler under /app/resources called people.php or people.groovy and invoke the corresponding method by convention in that script. So if I now actually send that request, I issue a get request first, you can see that the response has come back and it says list people, which is exactly what we would expect if the function on list has been invoked. And you can see that the other functions behave in a corresponding way. In the case of methods which are invoked with a particular ID, again, the ID is available to the script in the request zone of the global context. And so it's available to the script and can be used, for example, to output back out to the browser. So if I just go to, I'll close this response, close that response, go back to poster. If I now do a post on people, this is requesting a new person to be created, create a person. If I request a particular person, it's the response comes back, retrieve a person, person one. So it knows that I have requested a particular person, and from the global context, it can read the ID that I requested for that person, which in this case was person one. And it can operate with that data. If I do a put for that, it's saying update person, person one, so again it knows which person I've requested. And I can do a delete on a person, delete person, person one. So that's working exactly as expected. So creating a new resource handler in PHP or in Groovy is extremely simple. It's just a matter of creating a script in under /app/resources which implements the corresponding methods which you want to be invoked for the functions. And typically you would have a backing store for this, which could be a database or some other data storage mechanism to implement those RESTful functions. Okay. Then the last part of my demo is to talk about interacting with Kix programs and Kix resources and Kix assets, Kix programs from Kix to Kix Dynamic Scripting. And what I'd like to do is, again, there's an example of this which I've got, which is it's based on the Kix Web Services Catalog example application, which I've got already installed in my Kix system. So if I quickly log on to Kix, quit out of that and type eGUI, you'll see here this is the Kix catalog example, which may be familiar to a number of you from the web services demos. You can see that it's essentially a stationary catalog with a list of items that are orderable. And there's a mechanism by which you can specify the number that you wish to order and then order them through this interface. So this is a green screen application. It has a com area interface to the business logic. This enables us to invoke that business logic using the JKix APIs, specifically ExecKix link, the JKix link in this instance. And I've got a script. The simplest version of this is called catalyst.php. So again, I simply copy that into my public directory. and we'll have a look at this now. You can see that this is an extremely simple script, a very short script. It uses the PHP to Java bridge in order to invoke Java classes from within PHP. So the first thing it does is to import sample.catalog.com/area and the com/IBM Kix server program class, which is part of the JKix API. It creates a new catalog.com/area, which is an instance of the catalog.com/area class. It sets a field in that com/area to a particular value which is being expected by the underlying COBOL program. It then creates a new JKix API program object, sets the name to the name of the program that it wishes to invoke, and then invokes the link method, passing the com area as a byte buffer. It then uses PHP for loop to iterate over the contents of the response com area, extract some data from it, and render that back to the user. Now, there's one other thing that would be useful at this point, and that is to show you what we can do in php.ini. For development purposes, it's sometimes useful to have errors which are encountered in running a script rendered back out to the browser. And to do that, one needs to set, again, in config, there's a php.ini file here. So if I edit that, I search for display errors, find that, and then close that. The property here, display errors, is set to off, which is what you'd normally want for a production application. You wouldn't want any errors occurring in your application scripts normally to appear on the browser of an end user. But for rapid development purposes, this can be a very useful function. So I'm going to turn that on, save the script back, and in order for this to take effect, I think I'm going to have to restart my application again, which I will just do. This is necessary because I've already invoked a PHP script within this life cycle of the application, and the php.ini information has been cached within Kix Dynamics scripting, so I just need to quickly recycle that in order for that change to the configuration to take effect. So it's recycled successfully. So now, if I should be able now to execute my PHP script, which is called catalyst.php, this very simple script from my browser. So again, I think it's probably in my history. There we are. And hey presto, we get a warning message. This is being output to the browser because I set the display errors to on in my php.ini file. It's telling us that there's a class not found, sample catalog com area, in my PHP script, and it tells me the line where that com area is not being found. And that's not a big surprise, to me at least. If we go back to the... You can see here that we've got a Java import for sample.catalog.com/area. Now, this Java class has to be produced by... This Java class is a representation of a COBOL.com/area, and in Kix Dynamics scripting, the mechanism that we've provided for accessing COBOL.com/areas, it uses the JSOS record generator function, which is capable of reading in the ADATA output from a COBOL compiler run and generating a Java class which represents COM areas within that COBOL program as Java classes, enabling them to be interpreted and populated from Java and hence from PHP or Groovy. Now, we haven't actually created this yet. So, however, it's very simple to do, and I can do this as part of the demonstration. What I have already done is I've run the COBOL compiler with the ADATA option against the underlying COBOL program, and I've downloaded the ADATA output from that COBOL compiler run to my ZOS Unix file system, so that's available. What I now need to do is to run the JSOS record generator utility against that ADATA, and it will generate some Java files. The incantation to do this is a little bit verbose. It's fully documented in the Kix Dynamic Scripting manual, but what I will just do is copy this as a command into my ZOS Unix CLI. Oops, that didn't work. There we go. Right, so it's actually, that has actually generated some Java classes. It's probably going to take, it's a little bit too involved for me to describe exactly all the parameters to this command. But it is, as I said, it's documented in the Info Center. If I go back to my view of the application and refresh it, under Java, you can see that it's actually now created a sample catalogcomarea.java file. This is on itself, it's simply generated the source code now. Obviously, in order to run it, it has to be compiled into a class. So for that, there's a zero command which automatically looks under the Java directory of an application and compiles any Java classes that it finds there and stores them under the corresponding classes directory where they are automatically available on the class path of the application. So for that, I issue the command zero compile. Is now going to compile those Java classes and store the results under the classes directory. Compile was successful. If you can see here, well, you can see, I think, that the classes directory, which was formerly empty, if I refresh my view of that, you can see that a little plus has appeared. That's indicating that it's now some content, and you can see that it's generated a couple of compiled Java classes underneath that directory. So now that should be available on the class path. So if I now go back to my application and reload the script, it now works because it's found that Java class, it's loaded it, and it's been able to successfully access the backend application and retrieve the data from the Kix catalog example. I think you can see there that the content of that is the same or is the equivalent of the content of the Kix catalog example. Obviously, the script that we've got here is incredibly simple. It doesn't really do very much. It's not fully functional. It's just a quick inquiry request. Here. What we can do, however, now that that's working, we can build on this. We can then use the full functionality of the business logic of the backend program. And as an example of that, I've got a couple of additional scripts, which again are ready prepared here. So if I just copy these into my public directory. Open one of these up. you can see that it's got a lot more content. It's got the HTML content for the page with style sheets. Here, however, just down here, you can see that it's got the same imports because it's essentially going to be using the same JKIX APIs, performing similar functions using the COM area interface. I can, if I invoke this more full-functioned application, you can see that it's got a much nicer look and feel to it. I'll just maximize this window. And you can actually, it's got more of the information from the application, which I'll just quickly switch back to show you here, ball pens, blah, blah, blah. In the green screen application, you can see there are 119 in stock, same as the view that I get from the catalog application. If I go ahead and order some items from here, let's say I want to order, hold on. I need to enter the item number to order, so that would be 10. Order item. There we are. Now we've got the correct description for that. Let's order 9 of those. Could user Jonathan charge the kicks department and order those. Order successfully placed. Go back to the order list. You can now see the stock level is reduced to 110. And just to show that it is accessing the same data as the traditional KIX application, I'll go back out of there, list the items again, and you can see if I go back in there, you can see the stock level has reduced to 110. So that is a full-blown KIX dynamic scripting PHP application accessing an existing KIX COBOL application which has a COM area interface. That concludes my demo, so I will now end my sharing. And return to the presentation. Right. Now, thank you, Joseph. If we could, we've seen all the contents of the demonstration, so if we could move on to the next slide, please, which will be 18. Thank you. Now, we are, in fact, once again running out of time, so I'm just wondering how much further to go. Should we take another 5 minutes or so just to quickly run through the slides? And then I think what I'll do is I will once again end the session without completing all the slides, leaving it for the participants to look through the additional material. And anybody who has any questions on any of that is welcome to email me. My email address is on the first slide. So a quick word about configuration of KIX Dynamic Scripting. There are two primary configuration files for KIX Dynamic Scripting which must not be confused. The 0.config is the equivalent of the Project Zero application. 0.config is part of the underlying zero configuration. Every module has one in its config directory. It's part of the zero programming model, not specific to KIX Dynamic Scripting, stored in a JSON format. And, for example, you saw me edit this file before to configure the port number for the application, custom event handlers, and all sorts of options for the application. These are all documented on the project0.org, under the Project Zero information. Settings can be inherited from the 0.config files of dependent modules, the dependencies of the application, and can be overridden. In contrast to that, 0.kix.config is specific to KIX Dynamic Scripting, and is required only for KIX dynamic scripting applications. Every CLI installation has to have a 0kix.config in its 0home/config directory. It's never used in normal WebSphere Smash and has settings such as which KIX region is to be used for this CLI or for this application, information about KIX user IDs and KIX resource attributes, etc. It can be overridden on a per-application basis, but any setting by storing a copy or a modified copy of 0kix.config under the application's config 0kix.config in the 0kix.config file. Settings are not merged or inherited from multiple locations, and they're not inherited from the global CLI 0kix.config. An application-specific version is used if it's present. Otherwise, the global version from 0home/0kix.config is used instead. So the behavior in terms of inheritance and overriding is different and possibly confusingly different from the behavior of the normal 0.config file. Could we move on to the next slide, please, Joseph? Okay, interacting with KIX from an application, as we saw in my demo, PHP and Groovy scripts can interact with KIX, KIX assets, resources, and programs, applications, by means of the JKIX Java API. Groovy code can interact with Java natively because it's just an extension of Java. Is it just an extension? PHP code, as we saw, can use the PHP Java bridge. And there's a link here to the JKIX Java doc. And more information about doing this is available in the Dynamic Scripting Info Center. Next slide, please. So there are some limitations of KIX Dynamic Scripting compared with the WebSphere Smash or the Project Zero implementation. Not all Smash modules are supported. Some config settings are not supported. Automatic recycling is not performed, and not all PHP extensions are supported under KIX Dynamic Scripting. Also, not all JKIX APIs are supported, and as an example, the following ones, which don't make sense in this environment, aren't supported. There are also some minor differences in behavior between KIX Dynamic Scripting and Smash and other platforms. Again, information on this is available in the Info Center. Could we have the next slide, please, Joseph? Okay. At this point, I'm going to move. There is a section in the slides on potential pitfalls. Most of it covers the encoding issues, which result from running the KIX Dynamic Scripting, the Project0.org code, and the PHP code in a JVM which is running under an EBCDIC encoding environment for its Java. So I'm not going to go into details of that now because we run out of time. The information is there in the slides, and if anybody has any issues or any questions about that, feel free to email me. I'm now going to skip forward, essentially straight to the Q&A section of the session. So if we could move to the Q&A, please, Joseph.
Thank you, John, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And we have no questions.
Thank you, Jackie. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation.